And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, but before we get to today's theme, I want to remind you to take the poll that's up on my website, brainstormingonline.com. That's where I place the weekly poll every week, and you can go there. Log on. It's a simple would you rather question. Would you rather have a daughter of loose moral character, or would you rather have a daughter with no friends at all? Go ahead and cast your vote up on my website, brainstormingonline.com. That's brainstorming, S-T-O-R-M-I-N, online.com. I'll announce the overall results of the survey a little bit later in the week. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is upending the status quo. Each of my guests is discussing how his or her topic impacts the status quo. My next guest is a Stanford University professor, a futurist, and a forecaster. He'll tell us why he believes the summer of 2012 will be filled with unrest. And if you have questions or if you want to add to the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Paul Saffo is a forecaster with over two decades' experience exploring the dynamics of large-scale, long-term change. He's the managing director of Foresight at Discern Analytics, and he teaches at Stanford University, where he's also a visiting scholar in the Stanford Media X Research Network. Paul serves on a variety of not-for-profit boards, including Long Now Foundation and Bay Area Council and Economic Institute. Paul's essays have appeared in numerous publications, including the Harvard Business Review, Fortune, Wired, our own Los Angeles Times, the New York Times, and the Washington Post. Paul holds degrees from Harvard University, Cambridge University, and Stanford University. Joining us from Northern California. Good morning, Paul. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I am terrific, and thank you for being a guest on the show. I love to have thought leaders such as yourself come on to the show. And the reason I brought you on is because you have some very disturbing predictions of what might happen in the summer of 2012. So you assert that the summer 2012 is going to reshape our society in the decade to come. Now, that's a big statement. You believe that we're going to see protest and discontent that we've not seen since the 1960s. So what leads you to this dramatic prediction?
Well, and I don't think it's a disturbing prediction. This could actually be a good thing. If you look at last summer, even before the Occupy demonstrations, you had over 1,200 people arrested in front of the White House as part of the 350.org protests, which were, you know, very carefully led, very carefully organized, and the like, that Bill McKibben ran them. And let's admit they were effective. Look at Obama's decision to defer the tar sands pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Occupy, and you also had earlier last year the Arab Spring, and a reminder of just how potent a medium social media is for organizing protests. And when you look at all those things together and you look at what's going to happen in the next 12 months in the United States, it's a pretty safe bet that the summer of 2012 is going to be a hot summer in terms of lots of protests. You have a Supreme Court with a very controversial docket coming up. You also have two presidential conventions, nominating conventions, and all the other social issues of the time. So people have lots of reasons to be riled up, and then also is the simple fact that the Occupy movement, you know, the 99% is a very potent idea that has caught on. Just yesterday we had late last week we had serious demonstrations in Oakland. So it means there's going to be a lot happening.
Without a doubt. And I find it interesting because you do lay out a very compelling case, and I want to kind of go through it step by step if we can. But you compare the movements in the summer of 2012 to the 1960s protests, riots, and unrest. And I want you to do a little compare and contrast if we can, Paul. In what ways are the two periods of unrest similar, and in what ways are they vastly different?
Well, the similarities are that you've got a significant population of people who are very unhappy with the status quo, and they want to have change. Also similar is, underlying that, is a deep sense of idealism and questions about fairness. The differences are, back in the 60s, there was a secure, well-paid middle class, and the kids who were demonstrating knew that if they decided to stop demonstrating and cut their hair, they could go back and get a job on the line at General Motors or get on with their lives. And that secure middle class was puzzled by the demonstrations and somewhat in opposition to them. Today, there is no secure middle class. Everybody is feeling the insecurity, and so I think there's a lot more sympathy towards the demonstrators and what they're saying, even if people are opposed to the way things are happening, particularly, for example, this weekend in the Oakland demonstrations that turned violent. The other one is just the general sense of inequality. Today, 1% of the population accounts for a quarter of the nation's income and 40% of the nation's wealth. That's very, very different than the mid-1970s when 12% of the U.S. population controlled a third of the nation's income. And the other shift between then and now is back then the communications tools people had were telephones, wireline telephones, mimeograph machines, and the post office. And today we have social media. So that means that the velocity of the message can be much, much, much faster today.
Without a doubt, and we saw that in the Arab Spring. My guest is Paul Saffa. We're talking about the unrest that he foresees may happen in the summer of 2012. And, Paul, just continuing on in this compare and contrast a little bit, one of the differences that you point out so very eloquently, in the 1960s, the young protesters really marched on behalf of somebody else who was downtrodden, whether it was for equal rights, whether it was against the war for people who were fighting in Vietnam that may not have wanted to be there. Today, the new protests really are marching on their own behalf. So talk to me about that difference, because I think that is a crucial difference between, say, the 1960s and today.
Sure. Well, you look today, employment rates for recent college graduates have dropped dramatically. A recent study said only 56% of the 2010 grads had a job by spring 2011. And the people who are getting jobs are discovering their salaries are lower compared to what they were a few years earlier. One study said it's a decline of 10% since 2008, and they often have to take jobs that don't employ the skills they learned at university. Default rates on student loans are rising from 7% in 2008 to about 8.8% in 2009. It's important to keep in mind that revolutions are rarely started by the downtrodden. They're started by, you know, the downtrodden are too busy trying to survive to devote scarce resources to a cause. More often than not, it's well-educated, restless youth who launch protests. And, you know, from the student strike in France, that brought that country to a standstill in May 1968 to the student-led Arab Spring demonstrations earlier last year.
Well, now, you're not implying that we're going to see wholesale revolution across the globe, are you, Paul?
No.
I just want to be clear on this.
But I think this is a period where, you know, what's emerged is questioning of social promises. Arab Spring happened in no small part because the economic bargain made between students and the governments was stay in school, work hard, and we promise you a job in the bureaucracy. What people don't realize is that college graduation rates in places like Tunisia are far higher than the United States. And those people went to college with the expectation of jobs, and when the jobs didn't emerge, and they didn't get security, they knew they were, you know, it's a great reason to demonstrate. Now, let's put a positive spin on this.
By all means.
You know, too often people confuse uncertainty with, you know, doom and destruction. The Occupy movement could mutate into something that looks more like a traditional progressive movement. So this could be a positive thing. This could force conversations around issues that need to be had. It also, I think, is continuing to accentuate the problem with the two political parties in the United States. If you look at all the survey research, the two parties do not satisfy the majority of what people want. Over the last 10, 15 years, the public opinion surveys have shown that Americans are getting steadily, steadily more fiscally conservative and steadily more socially liberal. In other words, they really care about balanced budgets. They really don't care if men marry men or women marry women, except for vocal minorities. And if you think about it, neither the Democrats nor the Republicans really offer a home to people who are economically conservative and socially liberal. And so it also sets the stage that we're getting closer and closer to an environment in which a third party actually could emerge. And perhaps it's a third party that has more lasting power than third parties in the past. Now, that's a wild card. That's not a prediction. But the fact that the alignment is getting ever lower between the voting public and the parties they vote for means that, you know, it's if there was going to be a third party that's viable, that would emerge, it could emerge in the next 5 years.
My guest is Paul Saffo, a Stanford University president and the managing director of Foresight at Discern Analytics. I want to come back and talk just...
Not president.
I'm sorry, what's that?
I think you said Stanford University president.
I beg your pardon. I'm giving you a promotion that I don't have the power to grant you.
Nobody wants that job.
All right. But, Paul, I want to come back and talk about the other big component that you mentioned that is driving what you think may be some unrest in the summertime, and that is the new media that's out there. Back in the 1960s, media was controlled basically by the big three television networks and a handful of radio stations in each and every city. Today, we've got the new media, which we clearly saw demonstrated in the Arab Spring last year. With the new media, though, comes some interesting dynamics. Yes, anybody can start a cause, and anybody can get their point out to a large number of people. The flip side of that is, because it is new media, it is virtually leaderless. It is the web of people together, not necessarily one leader, a Che Guevara out in front of the group trying to lead the masses. Talk to us about the implications of what the new media mean, both pro and con, as we go into a period of unrest.
Sure. But the big change here, compare it today to the 1950s. 1950s was when television mass media merged and the mass media order that we took for granted for the following 40 years was established. We watched, we passively watched, and we never got the answer back. We're in the middle of a personal media revolution where oftentimes you cannot just watch, even if all you want to do is watch, you have to answer back, otherwise you don't have an experience. Can't watch Google. Got to put something in to get something out. So people are taking it for granted that they can be heard and that they have every right to be heard. As you said, however, at the same time, it makes leaderless movements more possible. So look at the battle in Seattle at the, you know, at the turn of the century, and then Anonymous here in San Francisco, and the Occupy movement, which is looks like it's self-organizing, leaderless. The downside is that turns into a mob, and the downside is also that you get violence. We don't exactly know what happened in Oakland 2 days ago, but it was a violent demonstration, and I suspect a contributing factor was there were no leaders. So in America, whenever you have social movements, the danger is that the movement slides back to violence and demagoguery. On the bright side, It turns into a new form of progressivism and populism. And so we all cross our fingers and hope that what's going on right now goes towards populism and not demagoguery.
All right. My guest is Paul Saffo, a Stanford University professor, and we're talking about what some predictions that he has for the summer of 2012, where there could be some unrest in the United States. So what outcomes do you foresee resulting from this unrest in the summer of 2012, Paul?
Well, we're going to have a lot more serious conversations about social inequality. It adds vast uncertainty into the political campaigns, and I'm not going to venture an opinion about who wins. But, you know, take for example, it looks like the Republican Party is still going to be figuring out who their nominee is during their convention.
Mm-hmm.
Throw some demonstrators into that mix, and it could be full of surprise. So my concern is that the downside is we get into a negative feedback loop where the demonstrators demonstrate, the police overreact, the demonstrators overreact in return, and things turn violent. On the other hand, it could be that what we see is that there really is forcing some hard questions to be asked about the system in Washington and about social inequality.
Well, it does remain to be seen, but I guess the bigger question for my listeners, Paul, is, as we've listened to the argument, it is a very compelling argument. Now that we know the direction that you see things heading, and it's a very logical, progressive argument that you make, how can we benefit from this knowledge?
Well, I think the lesson is nobody should be a bystander, that everybody has to participate in a national conversation around the questions that are being raised by groups like 350.org and the tar sands pipeline, and the main arguments being made by the Occupy movement, that if there are bystanders, then we have problems. Everybody needs to be engaged.
Well, but all you need to do is look at the voting records over the last few major elections that we've had to see that we have a vast number of people that sit on the sidelines, even with something as important as a presidential or senatorial races that are out there. What makes you think that this is going to be more inclusive, that this is going to get more people involved than we've seen in past election history?
Well, I didn't forecast that it would be more inclusive.
Ah,
it's my hope.
It's your hope.
You know, the problem with Americans is, you know, long ago, Walt Kelly's cartoon character Pogo during the Vietnam War put it nicely when he said, "We have met the enemy, and he is us." Now, there is an apocryphal story of a second frame in that cartoon. Turns out it never was drawn, but I like to think it was, where Pogo says, "We are surrounded by insurmountable opportunity." And I think we all need to recognize that fact, and we've The one suggestion I would have, there's a piece on my website about it, is something specific everyone should do. We need to talk politics over dinner. We need to invite friends over and say, we're going to have a conversation about the following topic. Americans don't talk politics over dinner. It's not considered polite. They only talk politics on talk shows where people are rude to each other. We all need to become policy wonks. We need to talk about politics with each other, and if it started in our living rooms and in our dining rooms, then maybe it would spread out and make a difference.
Well, that's a very practical step. My guest has been Paul Saffa. Paul, if people are intrigued by what you say and they want to learn more about you, maybe learn more about your predictions for the summer of 2012, you mentioned you have a website. Where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, I think I would pay attention to 350.org and Bill McKibben. They're not involved in the Occupy movement per se, but Bill is a real thought leader in the environmental movement, and 350 is a model of how you do protests in a nonviolent, positive way.
All right, that is great. 350.org. I appreciate it. Paul, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming. We'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure.